The Triathlon Show 327. Hey, what's up everybody, and welcome back to another episode of That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. I'm your host Michael, and on today's episode I interview Olli-Pekka Nuuttila. Olli-Pekka is a doctoral researcher at the University of Jyväskylä, and he has recently published a very interesting study comparing using block training, meaning a two-week block of either increased volume, increasing your volume by 70% over baseline, or increasing intensity to 5 interval sessions per week. So we're really comparing two extremes in terms of volume increase or intensity increase here. But the findings are really, really interesting, and we discuss them and how they can be applied in the real world. But before we get into that, big thanks to our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration. Precision Fuel and Hydration have a range of tools and products to help you personalize your fueling and hydration strategy so that you can perform at your best. Everyone sweats differently, both in terms of sweat rate, but also sweat sodium concentration. So hydration strategies should be individualized accordingly. And your fueling strategy will need to be adapted based on the duration and the intensity of exercise or competition, but also on your ability to tolerate certain amounts and types of fuel. You can use the free online sweat test and the quick carb calculator on precisionfuelandhydration.com to understand your fluid, electrolyte, and carbohydrate needs during training and racing. And you can even book a free one-on-one video consultation with the team to refine your strategy. As a listener of the podcast, you can get 15% off your first order of fueling and hydration products by using the code TTS22 at checkout on precisionfuelandhydration.com. And thank you to Senate. The Senate Indoor Swim Trainer allows you to improve your technique, power, and swim training consistency. I recently caught up with the team at Senate and had a great discussion around what might be the most important benefits of using the Senate Swim Trainer. And consistency is an obvious one, but another one that came up in our talk was your catch, so the catch phase of your swim stroke. Practicing your catch when on dry land on the swim bench allows you to really work that proprioception and motor patterns to maximize your catch also in the water. And importantly, on dry land, we have so much better proprioception or awareness of our proprioception and what we're doing. So working those neural patterns in can be really, really beneficial for improving your catch in the water. That's the number one use case reported by professional athletes using the Senate trainer that can swim however much they want, but they still find benefit in the specific purpose of improving their catch. Check out the Senate Swim Trainer and get a 20% discount on senateswimtrainer.com/TTS. And remember that you can get a full refund if you don't love it after 2 weeks. So now let's get on to the interview with Olli-Pekka. Just want to mention that we didn't have the greatest audio connection, and we also had one dropout where we had to puzzle two different recordings together. And hopefully we got everything, and it's understandable. But apologies in advance for the audio not being the greatest today. Hope you will enjoy it anyway. The research is truly fascinating, and I hope that it is clear despite those audio issues. Now, without any further ado, let's get into the interview. Welcome to the Triathlon Show, Olli-Pekka. How are you doing?
Thank you. Well, I got a little flu last weekend, but hopefully you can hear my voice despite that.
Yes, we can, and hopefully this won't be too stressful, and the voice will make it through the interview. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself, your academic background, and as well if you have any background in endurance sports or other sports?
Yes, so currently I am doctoral researcher at the University of Jyväskylä, and my research topics are mainly related to endurance training and endurance training monitoring and recovery monitoring. And so I'm currently doing my PhD thesis. I have already published 3 out of 4 papers, and in fact I just yesterday submitted my last one, so let's see how that one goes. And the goal is to finish my doctoral studies at the end of this year.
Well, that's exciting. Hopefully everything goes well with that last paper and dissertation. The reason that I first got to know about your research was a paper called Physiological, Perceptual, and Performance Responses to a two-week block of high versus low intensity endurance training. And I found it a really interesting study and a very practical question that hasn't really been answered too much. So comparing, because quite often we compare volume matched interval training versus just non-interval training, steady endurance training, but very rarely you see, that's not really how it works in the real world. In the real world, if you train easier, you can also train more. So that's kind of what this paper was trying to answer. Can you tell us a bit more about the background to this study? What has there been previous research like this, and what was there any other purpose than just figuring this thing out that I already talked about from my perspective that led you to do this study?
Yes, I find it always very interesting to compare the effects of volume and intensity on recovery and training adaptations and so on. And with this research we are talking about, we tried to find answer to some questions I think haven't been solved previously. And as you said, there are not too many studies done previously that have compared this type of blocks where training has been exclusively low intensity training and high volume, or then this type of high intensity interval training and volume has remained similar. So I think that's the value of this study, because there was that great contrast between these groups.
Yeah. Did you have any hypothesis going in based on maybe not comparative studies, but just in general knowledge from how participants usually react to intensifying training or increasing the volume? Did you think that one group was going to perform better than the other, or was it really not clear at all what was going to happen?
I think that high intensity block training has been more examined than low intensity training, and based on those studies, it was kind of expected that maximal endurance performance would improve followed by that training period. But then it wasn't that obvious what would happen after this type of high volume training. And typically, if volume has been increased, it has been increased via both high intensity training and low intensity training. So this was kind of unanswered question also, how would this type of volume increase only via low intensity training effect?
Yeah, so let's get into some of the details around the study and the methods. So maybe we first start with what were the outcome measurements, the performance and biomarkers and so on. Can you discuss the outcome measures that you assessed?
Yes, so 3,000 meter running performance was the main and only endurance performance test that we did. It was done on indoor track, and then about the recovery markers, we measured heart rate variability and heart rate during night. And on the same days we did 3,000 meter running test, we also assessed resting hormone levels and also collected nocturnal urine sample before the test day. And then we also analyzed subjective recovery every day, how the participants felt about their readiness to train, fatigue, muscle soreness, stress, sleep quality. And then, of course, during all training sessions, participants wore heart rate monitors and GPS data was also collected.
And the participants, can you describe, first of all, how many participants did you have, and what were the demographics and the level of the participants?
Yes, so in the final analysis, we had 15 participants per group, and there were males and females both in both groups. If I remember correctly, there was 9 males and 6 females in both groups. So, and their level, they were recreational athletes, so they all were used to regular running training and have that kind of background that they have already been doing endurance training. And their, I think VO2 max was about 50 milliliter per kilo per men.
Yeah, and their baseline. Their baseline time for 3,000 meters was 12 and a half minutes, more or less, for in both groups as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, and of course, because there were males and females, males ran typically a bit faster than females. So I think for males, for example, it was about 11, the baseline for the 3,000 meter test.
Yeah, and the same would apply for VO2 max, I guess. Maybe the males were, I don't know, 55 or something.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's good. It's 15 per group is actually quite big for a sports science study, so that's great. And then let's discuss the protocol. You started with a preparatory period, so can you discuss that and then go into the main blocks and how they differed?
Yeah, that preparatory period was 2 weeks, and the main purpose was to kind of analyze how our participants normally train, and also ensure similar background for all participants before our study period. And participants were advised to continue their regular training in terms of volume, but intensity was mainly only below first lactate threshold, but one interval session was done to familiarize with that kind of training.
One interval session per week in that period?
Only one at total. Oh, so
only one total.
2 weeks, one. Yeah.
Okay. And that session was, I think it was 6 times 3 minutes with 2 minutes recovery. Best
yeah.
effort.
Yeah, maximal sustainable effort. Yeah. So it wasn't like any heart rate target, but try to keep maximal sustainable effort through the training session.
Yeah. So let's then discuss the actual study period and the training that was done there. So in the interval group, what was the training protocol like during this period?
Both groups have 5 weekly main sessions, and in interval group, they were all those 6 times 3 minute intervals you mentioned. And so they performed 10 interval sessions in total in 10 weeks. And each participants were...
In how many weeks?
2 weeks.
Two weeks. Yeah.
So 5 sessions per week.
Yeah.
And if participants were used to do more than 5 sessions per week, then those were also incorporated to training program as low intensity session or active recovery. But all participants had at least 1 rest day on the week.
Yeah. And then the volume group, what did their training look like?
They increased their training volume from the baseline by 70%. And they also had those 5 supervised main sessions, and there were 4 so-called basic sessions and 1 long-distance session. And on average, this long-distance session was slightly above 20 kilometers. I think it was 21 kilometers on average, and the basic session was 13 kilometers.
Yeah. I have the table with the training stats in front of me, and looking at the preparatory period first, both groups trained. They trained about 5.5 to 6 hours, more or less, per week, and which was basically 45 kilometers on average per week.
Yeah.
Then But then in the interval group in the study period, they still trained. Well, they trained a little bit less, 5.2 hours, and but 50 kilometers. But the volume group trained went from 5.4 hours in the preparatory period to 9 hours in the study period, and they're running volume in kilometers went from 45 kilometers to 77 kilometers to give the listeners an idea of what that looked like in practice.
Yes.
Okay. So, and at what point did you do the test? Well, you also had a recovery week, which we should mention after the study period. So, what did that look like?
So testing days, were performed four times in total during the study period. There was that kind of control test before the preparatory, then pre-test, like the baseline tests, where then between the prep and block period, there was the first recovery week, in fact, after the prep period. And then immediately after the block, there was that one rest day, but then was the charge testing day, and then final fourth testing day was after the last recovery week.
Got it. And what did the recovery week look like? How much did volume and intensity reduce?
It was minus 50% from the baseline, and it was similar. The both recovery weeks were similar, so that minus 50% wasn't from the block, but it was from the baseline.
And only low intensity.
Only low intensity training.
Okay. So then let's get into the results. First, we can discuss the performance changes. So the 3,000 meter test. What happened in both groups?
Yes. So both groups improved their 3,000 meter performance immediately after the block, and there was no difference between the groups. So it was almost surprisingly similar. If we look at percent change, it was about minus 2 in the interval group and about minus 1.5 in volume group. So pretty similar. But I think in that article, it's interesting to look also at the differences between individuals. There is that figure 2 where individual changes are illustrated. So there,
yes.
In both groups, there also were few individuals who did not improve. But that change was significant, of course, most of the participants improved their
performance. So looking at the individuals, it seems like in the volume group, there were more people that had a smaller improvement that you could call non-responders, and in the interval group you had maybe two non-responders, but the rest were all responding well and improved significantly.
Yeah, that is true, that there were more kind of trivial responses in volume group compared to interval.
Yeah. And what about other than the performance mark? Did we discuss already? Sorry, you said the test results after the recovery week and immediately after the
right. Just immediately, but then after the recovery week, there in fact was no significant difference between the immediately after and the after recovery week. But of course, the peak performance was better after the recovery week compared to baseline, and the final adaptation kind of was then minus 2.5% in interval group and in volume 2.2%. And if we change these to seconds, it was 19 seconds in interval and 17 in volume.
Okay. Yeah. And what about the other outcome measures, the subjective markers and the hormonal markers? What did you find with those?
Well, if we first look at the subjective markers, I think we would have expected some increase in fatigue based on previous studies, at least
in volume overload studies, there have typically been significant increase in fatigue. And well, I found that readiness to train quite interesting marker, since it kind of combines multiple aspects, like how mentally ready you are and how physically ready you are. It may also be challenging to estimate, but I find it interesting marker. But anyway, most significant changes were found in muscle soreness. And interestingly, it increased only in interval group. So in the volume group, there was no significant increase in muscle soreness. And in fact, during the recovery week, it even decreased compared to previous level. And so the difference was also significant in the change between interval and volume groups.
Yeah. And the biomarkers, hormonal markers, and so on?
So in hormones, I think most interesting finding was the change in noradrenaline, which increased in interval group. And it was also interesting that it remained elevated also after the recovery week. There basically was no change during that. So it seems that it may take quite long period to fully recover from that kind of pain. And so in volume group, there was no that kind of change in noradrenaline or any other hormones which we measured.
Yeah, perfect. So let's discuss these results a little bit more, and here we can, some of it will of course be more speculation than actual like things that we know, because we will have to do that and draw some conclusions. But what do you think, what is your basically your conclusions from all of this when it comes to how these results can be applied for endurance athletes at a high level? What would you say is the main takeaway?
Well, first of all, I have to say that I was kind of surprised how well these recreational athletes tolerated both of these blocks. And if we think about higher caliber athletes, I think they probably would tolerate it even better than recreational athletes. So it seems that this type of blocks could be pretty effective method to improve maximal endurance performance and also quite rapidly.
Yeah. 2% in 2 weeks of in a 2 week block plus a recovery week. That's a really good 2% is a lot in endurance sports. So, yeah. So that's great. What about when comparing the two groups? So of course we had a non-significant difference between the volume group and the interval group. But that being said, as we talked about a little bit, you had more trivial responders in the volume group, but on the other hand, you had more perhaps negative other markers in terms of subjective markers and biomarkers in the interval group. So, what can we say about which type of training is right at which point in time? Like, when might it be better to do high intensity training? When might it be better to do a volume training in terms of these types of blocks?
Yes. First of all, it's obvious that you can't do this type of interval training through the whole training season. And this 2 week block was already quite big. And in previous studies, there also have been like 7 day shock microcycles. And I think if we have shorter interval blocks, that may also decrease the likelihood of those negative responses we found in our study. And then on the other hand, as it seemed that high volume training was better tolerated, it may be possible to do even longer volume periods that we used in this study, like 3 to 4 weeks. So, and about the individual responses, as you said, I think if I have to choose between these two groups, and the main target is to improve maximal performance. Of course, it looks like that interval training is more likely to improve, like not just trivially, but significantly, your performance.
Yeah, and that's very much aligned with what, for example, a lot of taper research has shown already, that when you're tapering, you do want to have that high intensity in your training, even when volume goes down. So it's not really surprising. I think what could be interesting is to see, could the interval group have gotten the same results with maybe 3 interval sessions per week instead of 5 per week, or what is the minimal effective dose of intervals?
Yeah.
But of course, there's a lot of things that could be looked into further and further.
Yeah, and well, about those individual responses, another interesting finding was that there were even 4 individuals in the interval group that impaired their performance after the recovery week, which was kind of weird, and you would not expect that kind of result.
Yeah. About the recovery week, what do you think about that? Because you said that there was no significant difference in performance after the recovery week compared to immediately after the block. Mm. But there was a non-significant difference, though. So I can't remember what the numbers were, but in the interval group, for example, it was 2% after the block and 2.5% after the recovery week. So even though it's not statistically significant, there might be a bit of a trend that the recovery could help on average, with all the caveats of individual differences and so on.
Of course. But
what do you think about the recovery week in general there?
Yes, I think one reason for those weird responses may have been that they have already needed some interval sessions during the recovery week, because typically it is suggested to have like maintained intensity despite volume is decreased during tapering. So as we did now, high intensity sessions, only low intensity training, it is possible that there was already some kind of detraining effect, especially in that interval group when they were like accustomed to perform very, very high frequency, high intensity sessions. And I think most of those individuals who impaired were kind of high responders on those immediately post-test. So they were like capable to tolerate the heat block very well and almost from interval session to interval session improve their performance.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense that if the recovery week would have included some intensity, then maybe that would have achieved the best of both worlds almost. Yes. Other than that, what comes to mind to you when you, like, if you were coaching or advising an athlete, how would you incorporate these kinds of very specific blocks, or would you do it more traditionally with maybe a mix of both and more steady volume? What's your thinking around that?
Well, I don't think I would do throughout the year this type of very, very focused blocks, like only low intensity training or only high intensity training. But I think it's not that much studied how these type of blocks would work in long term. I know only from study, one case study from Rennestad et al. From cyclists who did like low intensity block, moderate intensity block, and high intensity blocks during 1 year. And those results were very interesting. So it would be nice to study that kind of aspect, how it would be if we like alternate these type of blocks between volume and intensity. But perhaps this type of at least interval blocks could be effective when you are peaking for your performance And I think that is like the most obvious use of that kind of block. And then about the volume blocks, for example, training camps are examples when it would be easy to do that kind of high volume training and high quality sessions in group environment.
Yeah, that makes sense. Makes sense to me. And also because the markers of recovery and so on were better, than you could potentially have more of those volume blocks even in a long base training part of the year. You could have many training camps where you do a lot of it, and it wouldn't necessarily require as much recovery. But then you want to be more careful about when you do focus in on the high intensity, because the recovery required might be, or the cost of doing that are higher or seem to be higher based on the measures that you had in this study anyway.
Yeah.
So that makes a lot of sense. And it's interesting. I'm doing another interview basically right after this one with Luca Filippas from Italy, who did a study that you've probably seen with the different periodization schemes with pyramidal and polarized training test distributions and mixing and matching over 16 weeks. And they found the same thing with doing the polarized training with high intensity towards in the second half of the periodization was more effective for 5,000 meter performance, probably because the same kind of peaking phenomenon that we already talked about closer to performance. Interesting. So what else have you been doing? This is not on our list of questions, but I'm just curious, what are the other studies that you have been doing as part of your PhD, just in broad strokes? Do you have any highlights that you can share from them?
Well, my first study was about comparing different type of endurance training sessions and their acute responses and 24-hour recovery. So we did on the treadmill, low intensity, long distance session, moderate intensity session, high intensity session, which was in fact 6 times 3 minutes as in this one, and then one supra maximal 10 times 30 second interval session. And we measured counter movement jump, heart rate variability, and then some parameters during sub maximal running test immediately after, and then 24 hours after the session.
And what do you find? Did they differ?
Well, there were some differences. For example, it was interesting that those sessions which decreased heart rate variability the most, which were moderate intensity and high intensity session, those were then the sessions that did not impair neuromuscular performance in the counter movement jump test. So counter movement jump test was impaired after long distance and supramaximal intervals, but heart rate variability decreased less after these sessions. And well, another interesting finding was that submaximal heart rate decreased after all sessions 24 hours afterwards, but RPE still remained elevated after both interval sessions. So this was maybe kind of expected, but it reminds that heart rate is not always that good marker of recovery or current readiness to train, but you should always also use like RPE or that kind of perceived exert and how it feels to run that certain speed.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think especially in triathlon, where a lot of athletes are training at a high volume, I think it's much more seeing a high heart rate, higher than expected heart rate, is almost a good thing, because it indicates that the athlete is fresh to me. That's as a coach how I look at things normally. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could also be maybe that they had more coffee than normal, but yeah, I'm definitely never concerned, or usually not concerned, all else being equal, with high heart rate. But low heart rate is a bit more concerning, because that can often be an indication of fatigue.
Yeah, it's sometimes challenging to know if it's positive training adaptation or if it's fatigue. But I think that experienced athletes would like recognize it.
Yeah, What about the one you just recently submitted? You can probably not talk about that in detail, but what is the general theme of the study?
Yeah, well, basically it was kind of final for my thesis, so the aim was to put this information into practice we have gathered from these previous studies. So it was basically about individualized training prescription, and it was not just similar as those heart rate variability guided studies, but kind of similar logic was different.
Very interesting. Looking forward to seeing that when it comes out. And are you on ResearchGate?
Yeah.
So people can follow you and see when the study is out there. Great. And is there anything else that you would like to talk about this study or the other studies that you've done? And anything that we've let's do one final question on it. If you have 1 to 3 tips that you could give endurance athletes, amateur endurance athletes, what would those tips be? And this can be related or unrelated to your studies.
Sorry, 1 to 3 tips. What?
Tips, yeah, pieces of advice.
I think, first of all, the consistency of endurance training is perhaps the most critical factor if we want to see improvement in performance despite the level of athletes. So if you consistently train, whether it's polarized or block training or whatever, it is quite likely that you would improve your performance. And as has been in my studies, it has been pretty similar between increased volume and increased intensity. So I think the key is just keep training with high quality, and then you sooner or later will get the reward of it. And well, then perhaps about the recovery markers that I have used in my studies, there I would say that you should not rely only on one marker like heart rate variability and only trust what it says, but rather try to get like more broader view. How do you feel? What is your perceived recovery? How is your training going? And also, of course, heart rate variability is also a good marker, and I think it has a clear advantage, but not used alone, but also with other markers.
Yeah, that is great. And let's then go into the rapid fire questions. So take just one sentence to answer each of these. And the first one is, what's your favorite book or resource related to endurance sports or science?
I noticed that I'm not the only one who have mentioned this, but I think Alex Hutchinson's Endure was very inspiring and eye-opening book for endurance enthusiasts.
Yeah, no, I said it many times. It's definitely by far the number one, the number one answer to this question. And for good reason, it's fantastic. What's an important habit that you've benefited from athletically, professionally, or personally?
This may be a bit boring answer, but I think that regular endurance training dose for me is good for my physical and mental well-being.
Who's somebody that you look up to or that has inspired you?
Well, during my junior athlete years, I would say that Mika Myllylä was definitely my number one idol among endurance sports. And if discussing professionally, perhaps Stephen Seiler is a person who has done lots of very interesting and important work among endurance research.
Yeah, Yeah, Mika Myllylä was one of my heroes as well as a kid growing up and being interested in endurance sports and growing up in Finland as you. Definitely a great one. All right. Well, ResearchGate is. Do you have any other places where people can follow you? Are you on Twitter or anything like that?
Yes, I'm also Twitter at opnutila. So you can find me also there.
Perfect. I'll have the links in the show notes. All right. Thank you so much, Olli-Pekka, for coming on the show and discussing about your studies. And good luck with the final push for your PhD.
Thank you very much.
I hope that you enjoyed that interview. As always, you can find the show notes on scientifictriathlon.com with links to Olli-Pekka's Twitter and ResearchGate, as well as the paper we discussed and a previous paper that we also mentioned with the different responses to four running sessions, different recovery responses to four different running sessions. We also briefly mentioned a block periodization case study in an elite cyclist that covered more than 1 year, 58 weeks, and that's by a case study by Rønnestad. I'll put the link to that as well in the show notes for those that are curious and want to read that paper. Next week on the podcast, I interview Dr. Luca Filippas on a study that he did, which is really interesting, on the periodization and all aspects of using pyramidal versus polarized training intensity distributions or the combination of the two. Fascinating stuff. And Luca is also a coach, and we discuss some of his coaching methodology as well. He has some really, really good perspectives and is a great guy to talk to. If you are looking to take your triathlon training to the next level, then please consider having a look at our training plans or coaching services. Check out all the information on scientifictriathlon.com. We've helped hundreds of athletes, and we hope that you can be next and that we can help you achieve your triathlon goals. Big thanks finally to our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration, that you can find on precisionfuelandhydration.com. Use their free online sweat test and quick carb calculator to understand your fluid, electrolyte, and carbohydrate needs, and book a free video consultation with the team to refine your strategy. Use the code TTS22 at checkout for 15% off your first order of fueling and hydration products. And thank you to Sen8. Use the Sen8 swim trainer to improve your technique, power, stamina, and most importantly, your swim training consistency. Get 20% off your order on the swim trainer with a promo code that you can get on sen8swimtrainer.com/TTS. And don't forget that it's a risk-free investment. If you don't love it after 2 weeks, send it back and you'll get a full refund. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.